Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Here comes the pitch. Bias swings. Line drive. Base hit down the right field line. Fly the W. The Cubs win. Rizzo scores on the pinch hit walk-off single by El Mago, the magic man. Magnifico tonight.
Shotgun, high snap. Cutler takes it down, has plenty of time. Winds up to the end zone. Jennings!
Wow!
Touchdown catch!
What a catch!
Touchdown Bears! Oh my, what a catch!
Well, it was a heck of a throw by Jay Cutler to have confidence in his own ability to make it, but then the catch was equally as great as the throw.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Oh, man, we're close, Tom. We are close, close, close. It's been 8 months and 30 days since both the Cubs and White Sox last played a baseball game. It's been 5 months and 30 days since the Bears last played a football game. But, and it's a big but, if, and it's a big if we do things the right way from a health and safety standpoint, that could be changing within a month. The problem is, it doesn't appear as though America as a whole wants to do things the right way. Hi, everyone. A pleasant good afternoon to you. Alongside Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Tom, here's what I mean. Confirmed coronavirus cases in the United States surpassed 2.5 million this morning. Our country makes up by far the largest share of the worldwide caseload at 25%. Meantime, every major sports league in the United States is gearing up for action by the end of July in some fashion, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, and the start of training camps across the NFL. And I'm guessing, Tom, players and coaches, they're no different than us. They've got to be concerned about going back to work in this climate with those numbers.
Yeah, right. You know, Zach, you always have to have a plan in place. You also have to expect the worst case scenario. But you think about the surge in the coronaviruses and the way they're exploding is because people aren't protecting themselves. The new normal, until there comes a virus or the numbers are in such a downward trend that they feel confident what they're doing, it's not going to be, you can't expect someone else to protect you. You got to protect yourself. Okay, now let's go to the less serious important. We'll talk about sports. They're going to learn a lot about the effects of coronavirus on some of these young guys that are healthy and their ability to overcome it or how it spreads in contact type sports. So, yes, don't be naive to think that someone's not going to get infected because it's just a matter of time. However, when you're talking about society that we were in the surge around the country, you know, it's just the whole idea of these guys not protecting themselves in mass amounts of people.
And I'm going to get to that in a second, but there is proof. If you look at what's happening in Europe and what's happening in Asia, you can do this and live with the virus around us as long as you do it safely. I mean, there are major soccer leagues that are underway playing sports in Europe. They're playing baseball in Japan. They're playing baseball in Korea. And they don't have anything there that we don't have here. It's not as though they've got a vaccine when we don't. It's not as though they've got reliable treatment medication when we don't. You know what they're doing? They're adhering to the things we know that work. Wearing a mask, social distancing, paying attention to your hygiene and constantly washing your hands and not touching your face. These are simple things that all of us can do. And if we all did it in this country together, coast to coast, up north, down south, major cities, rural areas, if we all do that, we can start to function and at least have a little bit more of a closer to normal life than we've had over the last 4 months. And it doesn't matter what age group you are. I mean, think about this. So 28-year-old Utah Jazz All-Star Rudy Gobert, essentially the player who led to all of sports in this country being shut down after he tested positive for COVID-19 back on March 11th. Well, Gobert tells a French sports publication that he still hasn't fully recovered from the effects of the virus. And he contracted it back in March. Says that while his sense of taste has returned, his sense of smell has not completely come back. He says the doctors tell him it could take up to a year to return. And because he wasn't diligent, and he admits he didn't take it seriously back then, he infected some of his teammates. They're angry with him. Those are relationships that will take a while to mend, and that may not even be possible given the landscape that we're living in. Then you've got Atlanta Braves third base coach Ron Washington, the former manager of the Rangers. He's 68 years old. He's considered part of the vulnerable age group. He says he's going to have to wear a mask and gloves at all times while working with players this season. I'm sure we'll see that in the National Football League when you have some older coaches working with younger players. It's the right thing to do for everyone's safety. Then there's Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. And I bring them up because they are not acting in, quote, the best interest of player safety, according to NFL Players Association Executive Director Demoris Smith. It's because Brady and Wilson continue holding informal workouts with their teammates, something the union's medical director has told players to avoid because it's not safe. And reportedly, 10 teams have had positive coronavirus tests for at least one player in the NFL. When you have the biggest names in the sport not following the rules, that's a problem because they can influence what happens in society, Tom.
Right. You know, I don't care about the biggest names in sports because basically they're going to do what they want to anyways. I have more concern about the health director for the NFL in what he has to say. So if they go through these non-contact social separation type of workouts and they start passing the virus to each other, that's going to tell you right there, Zach, that football may be not be able to be played. You know, yeah, you can disagree with what these guys are doing, but, you know, unless you ban them from all teammate contact, that's the only way that you may get this message through their head. But you also may be learn a really valuable lesson before you start bringing mass bodies together in the same area to coach them to their responsibilities.
Now, this is where it gets a little tricky because it's the union medical director that's telling the players not to hold those informal workouts because it's not safe. And the reason I think they're doing it, and it could be legal, because while you're negotiating player safety between the union and the league, you know, if the players are going out and they're holding informal workouts and it's not safe and they're still doing it, you know, that could lead to some trouble once you do have formalized workouts when training camps are scheduled to begin during the late part of July. And I want to go back to something that Sean McVay, the Rams head coach, said about a week and a half ago. There was a joint Zoom conference between Sean McVay and Anthony Lynn, both coaches of the LA teams, the Chargers and the Rams, because they're going to be on Hard Knocks this season. And McVay said, quote, "There's such an influx of information that is ever changing. It is a little bit mind-numbing what you get down to. It's figuring out what is going to be the best way to operate and having the agility to adjust. Is this crazy, Coach Lynn?" He said, "We're talking about some of this stuff and we're playing football. We're going to social distance, but play football. This is hard for me to understand. I don't get it. I really don't." And I understand where he's coming from. I mean, you think, Tom, you played it at the highest level. can you do this safely? I know it's all systems go from an NFL standpoint, but they haven't had to deal with it yet. They will at the end of the month. Can you do it and do it safely where players have confidence that they can go out there and do the things they would do on a normal practice field in a game without having to worry about their health being at risk?
You know what? I mean, there's always going to be that concern. First of all, you play a sport that you always have your health a concern. It's a risk anyways. But now it's a whole different type of risk. So whether you're talking to McVay or you're talking to a coach like Ron Washington, one's 68, one is in his 30s. So now you got to talk about how you create a competitiveness to do to your team what you need to do to get them better. So if the NFL gets together, say it's July 28th, and then by August 1st or 2nd, you have an extreme number of corona cases, that's going to tell you. It's going to answer the question for you. I don't think this is something that the NFL is going to continue to have a naive approach to think that they're healthier than the risk itself. So, again, it's about having a plan in place in case the best possible scenario happens. If the worst case scenario happens, like you mentioned Rudy Gobert when he got it back in March, and that halted everything, it's the same thing that could happen on football a week or 2 weeks into it. But again, I think those are the new types of lessons that society's going to learn from trying to put protocol in place when you may not be able to.
Yeah, I heard Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, and I think he said it the best. The virus isn't going anywhere. It's here, and it's not as though we're going to have a vaccine anytime soon. So you have to learn to live with the virus. Can it be done? Well, we see that in sports leagues in Europe and Asia, it's being done, and it's being done safely. We need to be able to do that here. And, you know, the concern that I have isn't necessarily what happens once players in all these sports come to the practice facility or the stadium or arena that they're playing games in. It's being diligent and being smart outside of the facility, you know, because the NBA's got its bubble in Orlando. The NHL will have its hub cities. But the NFL is not operating under a bubble. You know, once practice ends, you're going home. Now, are you going to stay home or are you going to do things that put you and your teammates at risk and the game at risk? And the same thing for baseball. And I think we're asking young people who clearly have not been diligent in our country as a whole to this point, which is why we've gotten this influx of cases that have skyrocketed during the month of June. We're asking people to live a life that's foreign to them for the greater good. Everyone's got to sacrifice a little bit, even if you're not considered highly vulnerable, because everyone becomes vulnerable if you're not smart and diligent about this.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, if these guys get together and they start getting together with their friends inside the locker room, inside the meeting rooms, and yeah, they have to go back and face a society as normal as possible. But I will say this, Zach. So when you're a football player and you're in the off season, you have a little bit of time to expand your boundaries, whether it's working out, vacation, family time. Once the season starts, especially training camp, because you've been a part of 20 training camps yourself, that timeline is cut to an eighth. You don't have any more free time. You don't have any more social days open where you can go and freelance out of the community, out of the area. So I think one of the preach points of every team, every organization, to every one of these football groups are going to be limit the amount of contact you have with people outside of your group, your family, your support system. And so, again, that's where the numbers are going to come out of the contact of the sport itself. How you can limit your exposure outside of the facility, because they give you three meals a day. They provide everything for you inside that facility. It's not like you need to go and venture out to the hardware store in the middle of a Tuesday to get something. You have to protect yourself once football gets started.
All right. Can I allow myself to dream a little bit? Because if we do this the right way, I'm talking about a society, and we start to behave accordingly, give us an opportunity, all of us in any industry that we're in, the chance to live a little bit more without putting ourselves at risk even more, then we're going to have a monster sports summer, Tom. Because think about what could be in store by the end of the month. You mentioned it. Training camps will be underway by the end of July. The baseball regular season will start July 23rd or 24th, depending on your team. And usually you would say the start of a baseball season is fun, but you know what? It's a long season. It's boring. Not so this year. You got to have a football-like mentality because it's essentially a sprint to the playoffs. So you've got a playoff to get into the playoffs. That's what the regular season is in baseball, very similar to a football season. You're going to have the NBA playoffs. Think about it. You're going to go to a training camp practice or watch a training camp practice remotely. So you're safe. You see it. And then at night, you get to flip on baseball games, Cubs or Sox, the NBA playoffs all day. The NHL playoffs are going to resume very soon as well. It's awesome. I mean, it's great.
It is. I mean, you know what? And I got to tell you, in the last couple Sunday mornings, because I get up so early, I happen to turn on the Korean Baseball League. And you listen to Jason do the commentating along with, I don't want to forget the young lady's name that he works
Jessica
with.
Jessica Mendoza.
Yes, very good. Very knowledgeable baseball commentators. And so I'm kind of captured just by the commentators listening to the sport. I don't know anybody in the Korean Baseball League, but I am watching it because it's just anticipated action that you get to see that we haven't got to see in any sports here lately, other than if you're watching NASCAR and golf and stuff. So, yeah, I am so hungry for the baseball season just because, as I talk to Coom every time about the Houston interest, the White Sox interest, the David Ross and the Chicago Cubs interest, and all the other sports stories that go along with it. But you're right, Zach. If we do have this this just overwhelming amount of buffet sports and all the games and all the kind of stretches are important, it's going to be awesome for all the people who have been hungry to wait to watch something for as fun as sports can take your mind away.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think we've all been looking for a little bit of an escape. You know, you haven't been, at least until recently, and I still don't think it's relatively safe to go out to a bar and have a couple of cold ones. You know, you probably feel more comfortable doing that at home. We haven't been able to go out in large groups and meet our friends. But, man, it would be fun if at the end of a workday, whether you're someone that is forced to go out and about and work or you're working from home, at least you have that escape for a couple of hours every night or every afternoon by watching the leagues that we care about in this country, the teams that you grew up rooting for and you have a vested interest in, as opposed to what you've been doing, watching the Korean League where – you know, it's sports, so it's on. Like, sometimes I'll find myself watching soccer, and I'm not a soccer guy. I'm not ripping the sport. I'm not one of those guys either. But, you know, it's not normally something I would do. But you get bored, and it's on. And imagine if you had the things you care about on. Well, we're in store for that by the end of July if we're diligent and we're safe and we do the right things in society, because those sports are affected by everything we do as well. When we come back, Tom, one of the things I want to ask you about, because I've been thinking a lot about this ever since the announcement was made. Have you thought about what it might be like if you have to call games off of a monitor and you're not on site? So we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Also, we're going to be joined by a Pro Football Hall of Famer. At least he was supposed to get in this summer. The ceremonies have been canceled. They're not taking the Hall of Fame away from him, but the wait continues for your former teammate, Jimbo Covert. He will join us coming up at 1:30, and we hope that we can make this happen again and have the Coom dog, Ron Coomer, with us for the final hour. We'll see. We're working on it. We're efforting it as we speak, But hopefully at some point during that 2 o'clock hour, we can talk some baseball because there's a lot to talk about with the Coom Dog, and Ron Coomer will join us then. Tom Thayer is here. I'm Zach Zaidman. You can join us at 312-644-6767. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We'll be joined by Hall of Famer Jimbo Colbert coming up in about an hour from now on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer with you. And Tom, we're trying to be optimistic here and hopeful that our country as a whole gets its act together and starts being a little bit more diligent and safe. And, you know, we can all be superheroes if we just wear a mask. Think about it. You can dramatically reduce the numbers that we've seen and cut down on these spikes if we just do simple things that everyone can do. Wear a mask, wash your hands, make sure that you pay attention to distancing. And if you constantly do that, we'll be able to have sports by the end of the month of July, just like they do in Europe and Asia right now. And I'm choosing to look ahead to that day when we have this buffet of sports coming together at the same time. Baseball, football with training camps, the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs. And I found out this week that when the Cubs resume in late July, that the Coon Dog, Pat, myself, we're going to be calling road games from Wrigley Field. So the home games will be there at Wrigley, and we'll get to see the action in front of us. But when the Cubs hit the road, for safety reasons, and you can understand why, we're going to be broadcasting from Wrigley off a bunch of monitors. And it's going to be a unique experience. We've never done that. And I don't think anyone's going to complain because we have games. And as long as we have games, we'll find a way to work through it and make the product as entertaining as we always make it, because you're still going to have the fun conversations, the great analysis, as good of a play-by-play man as there has ever been in the sport of baseball in Pat Hughes. You're still going to get that, and we'll find a way to adjust. I think everyone will, because it's fun. Sports is fun. It's not worth complaining about from that standpoint. But have you thought about what may happen if you have the same scenario in the NFL and you have to call games off of a monitor if the Bears hit the road?
Well, you know, first of all, I think you guys, I think there's going to be a lot of different things, a lot of different instances will start catching your eye, and that's going to create some conversation points that's unlike just watching it at home. First of all, you're not going to have to be worrying about traffic to or from Wrigley Field when you're calling an away game. It'd be easy in and out. But no, I will say this. So when Jeff Joniak was up for the job of the play-by-play for the Chicago Bears, he and I went in an auditorium and we played a game with no sound on the video screen. And we commentated it as we are watching the game. So I know that's not the experience of watching it off a monitor, but it is an experience of broadcasting a whole game off of a video. And so when you're watching coaches tape, it's more similar to what you would get as a viewing audience and some of the angles and stuff. So, no, but, you know, you're around the game enough and you kind of understand what to look for. And there's so much pre-snap information given to us, down and distance, hash mark, personnel groupings on the defense or offensive side of the ball, no matter what you're on. And so there's those, a lot of things that you even consider before the ball is ever snapped. And so maybe some of the events, some of the ways of watching it may change a little bit, but it's not going to take away from the real fundamentals and techniques and wins and losses of the sport.
So I was talking with Len Casper about this yesterday on The Score, and I said, what kind of interesting conversations are you looking forward to hearing that takes place on the field? Things we would have never heard before because it's so loud at Wrigley Field and even on the road. And I brought up different scenarios. Is it bench jockeying that's taking place from the opposing dugout to the pitcher on the mound, or the guy at the plate? Is it, you know, say there's a pop-up that's in no man's land and you have the convergence of three different players coming at it, the communication that takes place. You know, imagine you'll have less of that this year than ever before, where you have those collisions between outfielders or collisions between infielders and outfielders on pop-ups that where people can't hear because they're fans in the stands. I was wondering what it's going to be like when hitters argue with umpires, when pitchers argue with umpires. And Len was laughing and he goes, I think it's going to be kind of boring. You know, you're going to find out that it's kind of mundane where, you know, you'll hear a hitter turn around and go, hey, that was low. You know, stuff like that.
You know, for you guys that are around the sport, maybe it'll be less entertaining. I was thinking for a guy like myself, I like that. I think that's entertaining. So you may have a couple of congenial back and forths between a batter and umpire, catcher and umpire, but it's those one explosive ones that you have every third, fifth, sixth game. So you still have the anticipation of the emotions of the game. Yeah, but, you know, it's like watching golf right now. I'm more intrigued by watching the conversations between golfer and caddy than I am listening to some idiot stand in the background and yell, get in the hole, from 400 yards out. So I enjoy watching the game. Now, you know, and we had Terry Gannon on a couple weeks ago, and I brought up the point that I like watching golf without the crowds there because there's a lot more to learn. And he said that he's getting ready to do his first golf tournament as a Jack Nicklaus Memorial in Ohio. And we're just talking about the differences in the broadcasting, because in golf, if you're really close on a par three, that's when you hear the crowd and that emotions. But, you know, now when you hit it within a foot of the hole or 6 inches, there is no anticipated reaction as the flight approaches the hole.
Yeah, I heard Bob Costa say this. He was talking about calling a baseball game now, especially when you're doing it on TV. And you almost always, and I think we do the same thing on the radio, especially at Wrigley, because the crowd is so intense and it's unlike any atmosphere in the majors. So when there's a big home run that's hit, even if you're calling the game on the radio, you call the play and then you lay out and you allow the crowd to breathe because it tells the whole story. I think the cool thing about calling sports on the radio is if you do it right, we're taking you to a place that you can't go. You're obviously not in the stadium, but we're giving you an opportunity to feel like you are on the radio. And sound is everything. It will be weird on a big home run. I'm not talking about a one that ends the game, but just a big home run, a momentum-changing play. You're not going to hear anything other than the actual play.
Well, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, I was asking Ron Coomer, would you control your emotions a little bit because the players can hear you out of the booth now? So the broadcasting booth where Jeff and I are in Soldier Field, it's on the second level. It's in towards the 30-yard line, and we have an open front. So if Jeff gets emotionally tied into a play, a result of a play, a big play, that – he'll be broadcasting it so loud, the players are going to be able to hear it on the sideline. So it's easy to broadcast the exciting plays in an exciting voice. Are you still going to have that same value on a disappointing play that's going against you? So, I mean, it's you know, that's going to be the real tricky thing for broadcasters, that, you know, use that volume of emotion if they control it when the players can hear them.
No, that's a great point. The other thing that I was trying to figure out, football, from my time on the sidelines, the crowd influences the energy on the sideline, the energy on the field. It disrupts the opposing offense when it's done right. It can intimidate as well. Where are you going to get your energy from as a football? And every sport will have this. This will be an issue in every sport. For example, when Craig Kimbrell comes into a game to close out the ninth, huge spot in the game. You know, there's the music blaring, the video board goes bananas, the crowd's on its feet, because everyone knows it all hinges on this, right? And If that doesn't fire you up, nothing will. And it clearly adds to the adrenaline. And when you're a closer, your job is to get on the mound, use all that adrenaline, everything that's pumping you up, and have it manifest itself in throwing the hardest fastballs that you can possibly throw. In football, think about what it would be like to take the field as a defensive player at Soldier Field and not have the crowd egging you on.
And Zach, you know, I've had that experience in the USFL, so I know what it's like. I know what it's like to play in the Coliseum with 20,000 fans. 20,000 fans in the Coliseum is virtually nobody in the stands. And I did that for 3 years in the USFL. So it's the obligation of you as a professional individual to be energized to go out there and play for the way what you're getting paid for, what's expecting of you, and you cannot let the emotions of the crowd affect your personal emotions. And I think that's going to be one of the great challenges, because you can see in a team throughout the course of my time, you could be in the locker room and you can see that your team is flat. There is no energy. You couldn't do anything to kind of excite that room, and it kind of gained momentum once you got on the field. If you don't gain that momentum, I think that flatness is going to linger a lot longer, because you don't have the emotions of the home or away crowd picking you up. For example, when I think of the Bears opening game this year in Detroit, if you go to Detroit on opening day, it's going to be a sold-out crowd of mad Detroit fans making it the atmosphere as difficult as Minnesota, Seattle, anywhere else you want to think is loud. So now you go game one, you got the Bears that they need to have that togetherness, and now you take that crowd out of the game, it makes it a lot more evenly of a matched opening weekends when you don't have that 90,000 crowd support.
All right, now we'll get to the fun stuff. We're going to take a break. When we come back, here's what I want to know. What are you looking forward to hearing in a football game that you never would be able to until this year, where games are being played without fans in the stands? How will that change what you learn about both teams? Who's going to have the advantage? When we're listening or watching the games, what should we be paying attention to that we normally would not, because we're going to have greater access than we've ever had watching a football game in the NFL? That's next with Tom Thayer. I'm Zach Zaidman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Zach Zaidman and Tom Thayer on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Hall of Famer Jimbo Covert joins us at 1:30, and then we talk a lot of baseball and life with the Coom Dog around 2 o'clock. Zach and Tom with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, 312-644-6767 is the phone number if you want to talk some sports with us. We've been talking about this new normal. If we can do this safely and sports resumes when we believe it will at the end of the month of July, including the NFL, where training camps will get going. And we've been talking a little bit about football because we spent so much time over the last few days kind of addressing the new normal in baseball and how we'll call games off of monitors and all that kind of stuff. That's our issue. But when you're watching games, especially football games, I think we are going to learn so much by being able to hear things we have never been able to hear before during the course of a game. Now, I was lucky enough for all those years on the sidelines covering the Bears. You know, you can hear the conversations that take place on the sideline, Tom. And I thought the interesting things that you would always hear, and I'd relay them to you on the air as best I could, you can tell when a defense is totally flustered by what the opposing offense is doing. You know, you learn a lot after the first series. They come back to the sideline, and there's a lot of adjustments being made. And you learn who the coaches trust. Because you know what, as smart as these coaches are, and a lot of them are brilliant, and the Bears have had some great defensive coordinators over the years, from Greg Blash to Lovie Smith to Vic Fangio, and now Chuck Pagano. It is interesting how they rely on certain players to tell them what they're seeing, and they adjust off of that. For example, as great of a player as Brian Urlacher was on the field, he had a PhD in football. He understood three levels ahead what was happening on the field. So when he came back to the sidelines, if the Bears were in a certain kind of defense that was not right early on against what the opposing offense was doing, Lovie Smith, Bob Babich would come over to Urlacher and they'd ask him what he's seeing. He'd describe it and they'd switch it based on his recommendations. And more often than not, it would end up working. You can tell when a quarterback is, and the term they use in football is seeing ghosts. You can sense when a young quarterback is completely rattled by what's taking place by the defense. You can hear it in those conversations on the sideline. But on the field, when we're watching a game and you can hear the conversations taking place between the middle linebacker and his defense, between the quarterback calling out the protection schemes. Take us through what you, as a guy who knows what's taking place, what are you going to be listening to that can give you a sign of how a play is going to unfold?
Got to ignore the verbiage out of the offensive side of the ball. Pay attention to the defensive side of the ball. Every week, the offense will change their terminology, their verbiage, according to the opponent they're playing and what type of personnel groupings they're going to see. And they'll look at the vulnerabilities of the opponent, and then everything can be adjusted accordingly. The defense is very consistent about their terminology. And, you know, if you go back to the 85 defense and you hear them, they have this term, it's called AFC, which means automatic front coverage, which is the coverage they would play according to the plan. So I'll speed this up a little bit. My brother-in-law played offensive line for the Atlanta Falcons for a long time, 11 or 12 years. So super intelligent guy that would absorb information during the course of a defense calling out what they were going to do, and then you kind of understood before they were going to do it what they're going to do. So now he's playing the Detroit Lions, and he memorizes every one of their defensive calls. The next week, we play the Detroit Lions. So my brother-in-law, John Scully, offensive left guard for the Atlanta Falcons, gave us every bit of the information leading up to the next week's game. And everything was for verbatim. We Wow. knew exactly where they were going before they would ever get there. It was one of the most abusive running games we ever had against the team. And so what my point of this is, Zach, is so we're all used to see here in Omaha, Omaha, out of Peyton Manning during his career, or Tom Brady making the adjustments. So kind of filter those out, pay attention to what the defense is saying accordingly, because the offense can be more creative because they have more terminology within they're trying to say. Defense is a little bit more consistent about what they're going to say on a play-to-play basis. So if you can start filtering some of that information in as an offensive line or offensive guys near the line of scrimmage, you can start telling yourself a lot before it ever happens. And you can even call plays knowing what they're going to call and get them into the worst of the positions. So back in the day of having that information filtered to me from one week to the next and it being the same calls, it works out. So that's what I'm saying. We're all used to hearing the offense talk so often. Kind of pay attention to the defense, and it may give you a little bit of vulnerabilities to the defense, or, you know, then you start understanding the changes the offense making a little bit more clearly.
All right, so if you know that right now, then the best defensive minds in the National Football League know it too. What can they do from a defensive standpoint to keep the offense guessing and on its toes?
You're going to have to change your terminology week in and week out. So it's also, for an offensive line, Zach, we also had a complete language of how to tell each other the snap count if one of us forgot it. And every week we would change it. We would have a whole different language that all meant the same thing, but we never used it 2 weeks in a row. And that's the same thing that defense is going to have to do. The defensive calls that the linebacker makes to the defensive line, they're going to have frequent changes. Because if Brian Urlacher, if Chris Spielman, if Matt Millen, if Ray Lewis, if they're constantly calling out what they want the front to do. Offensive linemen, they're a smart group of guys. They start figuring out, and they know exactly what they're calling it. And it's hard for the defense to put up a lot of fake calls because of the way the defense or the offense reacts on the line of scrimmage. You may be fooling some of your own players.
How important is cadence for a quarterback, especially now without fans in the stands?
Oh, it's going to be – I see that's going to be one of the great things because, you know, that the defense is not – or the offense is not going to be at a disadvantage when they go play in Seattle, when they go and play in Minnesota, like I said, in Detroit. So I think that it's discipline on the offensive line. The quarterback is going to call the huddle, and they're going to use a variety of cadences. But you have to have that discipline because – by the time the quarterback can go in the huddle and say, all right, blah, 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 play on three. On three, don't jump. And so he has a little bit of a reminder. So now you go to the line of scrimmage, and you got to remember the play, remember the plan of attack according to what the defense is showing you, and make sure that you don't start getting a little edgy when he goes hut, hut, because it's on three. And they can use a hard cadence trying to get the defensive line to jump, but that offensive line, the blockers, the tight ends, the backs, they have to be disciplined in their stance because the worst thing you'd want to do is because you're worried about the other side of the ball, you don't want to confuse your own players.
Who's the best right now in the NFL at being able to manipulate defensive players just at the line of scrimmage? Is it Aaron Rodgers, his ability to just get guys to jump simply by changing the way he goes about calling a play?
Yes. You know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's got a plan of attack as soon as he gets a player to jump. And he's been around these guys for so long, they know how to react when a defensive player jumps off sides. And then you have a little bit by Russell Wilson. Because there's so much paranoia of his creativity, these guys are trying to set that edge immediately at the snap of the ball. And so those outside pass rushers, they're a little bit jumpy. But also, when you're so familiar with your offense, like a Brady, like an Aaron Rodgers, and like Russell Wilson, and, you know, you got to put Drew Brees in there, too. These guys understand their offense so well that they can, you know, use that hard cadence to get a jumpy guy. But, you know what, also, they're alerted to a guy that's undisciplined before the game ever starts. Whether it's filled stadiums or not, a guy comes in with a jumpy reputation, you know it, and you try to change the count enough accordingly.
And I've seen you do this after every game. You know, you get the All-22 copy, and, you know, you'll spend hours just going over every play and watching what's transpiring on the field. And normally, you don't hear any sound. You're just watching video. There was a time, and to this day, defensive linemen do this all the time. I remember I was walking late at night at Hallis Hall after finishing up some work, and you just hear the speakers blaring out of the defensive line room. And I'm like, what's going on in there? And I pass by, and it's Tommy Harris. He's got the TV copy of the game, and he's got the volume turned up all the way. So you hear Buck and Aikman calling the game. But, I mean, at the highest possible decibels. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? And he goes, get in here. So I go in there, and he's waiting to hear the quarterback so he can get that extra jump on the ball once it snapped. And Tommy was as good as anyone the Bears have had in terms of having that advantage. And it wasn't an accident. I mean, he would spend all week listening to the opposing quarterback and learn everything about the way he makes a call. Are you now tempted to have the volume up when you watch tape? Because you'll be able to hear things, even though you expect a defense to change the calls each week. Aren't you going to want to listen, though, to see what those calls are?
No, because Tommy Harris is a defensive line that's closest to the football. And he's got to be more disciplined than anybody because he can hear exchanges between the center and the guard and offensive line talking amongst each other. And he's concentrating on one constant. That's the sound of the quarterback. And they can fall into a rhythm of how they give their cadence. If I'm an offensive player or I'm watching the football game, I'm watching 30 different things at once, and I'm listening to everything. You listen to the count, the way the cadence. Nowadays in the NFL, these guys go and they make a cadence tape. So now off of the video, they decrease all sounds and they only let you hear the cadence. So now you're hearing alerts. You're hearing how they're audibling, how he becomes sneaky about the way he calls, you know, the way they go to the volume of their cadence to try to set that hook because they're going on three, but they want you to think on one. And then you get guys like Dan Marino. He's so consistent about the pace of his snap count. Every snap count sounds the same. One it sounds a little bit faster than his two, but then on three, it sounds, you know, all of his cadences are really similar because he's a guy, get the ball in my hands, I'm better than you. He's not evaluating during a hesitant cadence. He's there to snap the ball to get it out of his hands.
You know, I was thinking about Mitchell Trubisky from that standpoint. You know, we spent so much time, and you've heard it, you've heard all these Zoom conference calls that the media has had with the different players, and they've all talked about how, physically Mitch has looked great in the workouts that he's had informally with his teammates, you know, the arms great and all that kind of stuff, the speed's there, the athleticism. That's not what it's about.
Right.
It's here's another level. It's not just being able to decipher what a defense is doing pre-snap and then what they morph into as soon as the ball is snapped and how there is a plan of attack based on your offense against whatever they're doing defensively and quickly being able to adjust. It's also being able to trick them. I mean, there is a real art to dominating at the quarterback position, and it's stuff that we never talk about on sports radio, but those are the kind of little edges that give you the ability to win if you're able to master them.
Right. You know, one thing about Mitch, I think when he goes through these informal workouts with his teammates, it's almost to throw 1,000 passes of the same route for that to become second nature. So when you actually run it in the game, you're not thinking about your aiming point. You're not thinking about your feet, your foundation, your arm position. You're just throwing it, man. And you become so repetitiously good at it, it takes that part of it away from your thinking. But it's just all the other components of the game that the quarterbacks, they have to think in an instant's notice. They can't think them and think about them. They have to say it and know it. But, you know, I do think when Mitch is out there that he can form, you know, a repetitiously, you know, throwing ability. But it's the other part that makes football so difficult to play at the quarterback position.
All right. As an offensive lineman, now, as a guard, do you really care what the defense is saying, or are you just concentrating on your quarterback? Even if it's quiet, you can hear everything that's taking place.
Oh, I'm going to the line of scrimmage every time and knowing exactly what the quarterback has already said to me, and now I'm only thinking about the anticipation of the snap count, but I'm listening to everything across the line of scrimmage. Because throughout the course of time, Zach, the terminology in offensive football has changed so drastically that you say a paragraph's worth of terminology that says, you know, what we used to say in a sentence back then, but now it's just a lot more complicated. It seems like the defense has always had the kind of same calls, rip and Liz. That's right and left. You know, it's all these, you know, abbreviated,
basic,
you know,
yeah.
You just listen to the first letter of what they're trying to say. And if they say it more than once, you better be able to pick up on it. So, again, some of the opportunities we've had to take advantage of opponents, but it's also like you talk about, listen to the players talk on the sideline. There's times that you come back and, you know, Keith and Jimbo, the two tackles, are hearing something from the outside that they're trying to relate back to the interior, or Jay or Bortsy or myself or whomever. You know, you listen to it, you contact A to B, and then you know it every single time they say it.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the actual football we're going to see on the field, because the offseason is done. How are the Bears, in this unique climate that we're living in, going to be able to conduct the kind of practices where you feel comfortable naming a starting quarterback, and how long will that process take? We will ask Tom Thayer when we come back. The Hall of Famer Jimbo Covert will join us at 1:30. I'm Zach Zaveman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.